Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the home of militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. The saga of the Big Beautiful Bill may be winding to a close today. Inside word on the Hill is that it will finally get past the House in the afternoon. If you've been following this saga, you know that the Big Beautiful Bill starts in the House, because that's how it works. Then it goes to the Senate, and they beat the bill up, and they did that. And then it has to go back to the House to be reconciled after the Senate makes changes to it. That's how the system works. And if it gets past the House the second time, then the president can sign it. And President Trump really wants to sign this thing on the 4th of July tomorrow. Palpable excitement at the White House at the thought of signing us on the 4th of July. So really looking forward to that duality. And it's happening. It's working, but it's been a long and difficult slog to get the bill through. If you were watching this overnight, the House stayed in session all night trying to get this bill through, just an all-night marathon session. Here with us to talk about the status of the Big Beautiful Bill and what we can expect next is Jeff Cruer, political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, and author of America's Last Chance, and host of the award-winning Ringside Politics. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, how's it going?
I think it's going well. Looking at where the Big Beautiful Bill is sitting, is this thing getting close to the finish line at last? Is the goal in sight?
Man, what a long process this has been, I'll tell you. I mean, from all the delays to the worries about whether we had enough votes, Hakeem Jeffries breaking records as far as his droning on and on. I think it's part of the amazing success the president's had over the first 6 months of his second term. And it's just been incredible, one victory after another. And even though I do have some issues with parts of the bill, I'm hoping they can rectify that in future legislation. This needed to pass for a lot of reasons. You can't deny President Trump the signature piece of his, second administration, his legacy. So Republicans, came to their senses, those that were opposing it, and got behind President Trump. I mean, he's a great closer. He's a great negotiator. He's very persuasive. And I'm glad to see that Republicans rallied behind President Trump and this bill.
I've heard it said this is actually the longest vote the House has ever held for this bill. It's never had sessions run as long as this time. That was the Democrats' strategy. They said going into this, even before it made it to the Senate, that their whole strategy was delay, 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 because they thought that the longer they delayed it, the more the American people might turn against it. That has not remotely happened. And the Democrats at this point look pretty superfluous. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking at the Democrats as a party we don't really need in Congress. They don't serve any purpose. All they do is give long, windy speeches to empty rooms and hold up legislation pointlessly for hours and hours and hours. And of course, most people in the country, let's be honest, most people don't know exactly what's in these giant spending bills. I hate it, but that's the way. So I don't really think there was any groundswell that was ever going to build up over provision 1,432 of this gigantic bill. They really were fooling themselves, thinking that delaying was going to work for them.
Right. And so they failed, and Elon Musk failed, and the people that were trying to attack it from the other side. So the bottom line is, this is President Trump, and this is part of his legacy, and this is the most important piece of legislation that he'll have in his first 2 years. And without it, it would put really the progress that he's made in jeopardy. I mean, we had jobs numbers come out today that were strong. We had border numbers that came out recently that were amazing. you know, from what he's done with foreign conflicts and bringing about ceasefires to his peace deals. I mean, it has been one victory after another. And what the Democrats offer is just promotion of illegal immigration, promotion of criminals, more wasteful spending. They're not connecting with the American people. Their ratings are horrible. I just looked at who's leading in the 2028 presidential sweepstakes for them, and it's Pete Buttigieg. I mean, a failed mayor, a failed transportation secretary, a failed presidential candidate, and they think he's going to win the presidency? They're crazy.
That would be such a bizarre contrast with the can-do Trump administration, which, as you noted, has just been racking up win after win over the past couple of weeks. It's like everything's coming up Trump all the time now. And I'm sure that has to have some bearing on how a bill like this gets through Congress, because the Democrats' strategy of delaying might have worked if Trump was not doing well, if the public didn't like him, if things were generally not working for him. But when he's looking like a steamroller, just, you know, going across the world and getting everything he wants, it's just insane for them to think that Hakeem Jeffries blabbing to an empty room was going to change the course of history.
And you know what also is he's so engaged. I mean, he's on the phones. He's negotiating. I mean, he's talking to these members of Congress, trying to convince them and say, hey, you know, I hear your concern, but we need this passed. And, you know, we can help deal with your issue later, but let's get this through. I mean, contrast that with Joe Biden, who was the auto pen presidency, who was out to lunch in every different way. I mean, didn't even remember people's names, was an embarrassment all across the board. And then you've got this president who's vigorous, engaged, involved in everything, both here and what's going on internationally. I mean, it's a great contrast. And I do think that's why I saw a poll the other day that the president is more popular among Republican voters than any president they've seen in the past five decades, even more popular than the great Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I was about to say, I saw that poll, and including Ronald Reagan, that is quite a landmark. And I understand the conservative or fiscal hawk objections here. I have some sympathy for the likes of Elon Musk, who are frustrated that there's not more spending cuts here and that the time is running out for us to get our fiscal house in order. But also, sometimes people say that fiscal hawks don't understand that you have to win political victories in order to get anything done. And there is a relationship between conservatism, fiscal conservatism, and libertarianism, and the Republican Party. And if you cut the knees out from a Republican president, if you were to hand him some terrible political defeat by scuttling this bill, you're just weakening yourself and setting up the big spenders to come rolling back into power.
Right. But I completely agree with you. I understand the argument that, hey, we've got to do something about the spending. We've got to bring it under control somehow. $37 trillion in debt is outrageous. I mean, there is going to be a point where we're not going to be able to continue this. We're going to have to figure out a way to bring this in line. Now, what the president's supporters are saying is, hey, there's going to be so much growth that we'll grow our way out of this spending problem. I'd like to see growth, but I'd also like to see some fiscal discipline. And, you know, the fact that there's still some of these Biden, you know, green energy credits in here, that we didn't get rid of all of them, that's sort of upsetting. I mean, the fact that, you know, we're not having more cuts. So I do understand where they're coming from, but, you know, that was not going to be enough to stop this bill. And hopefully that'll be addressed with some rescission packages, with some other legislation that can be addressed in the days and weeks ahead.
Now, the defenders of the BBB always said that we have to do those spending cuts with rescissions. We couldn't do them in this bill. It just doesn't work that way. So there have to be rescissions, bills that do the real spending relief. And President Trump has hinted that a lot of what the Department of Government Efficiency found will go on the chopping block in rescissions. But the cynical observer of these things says that'll never actually happen because we never get spending cuts. Everybody talks about them, but nobody ever does them. Do you think the rescissions bills are really coming?
I hope so, and I hope they make it a priority, because I don't want to think that all the work that Doge did, and listen, Elon Musk did a lot of great work, and he sacrificed a tremendous amount to lead Doge. Look at the blowback he had from the left. I mean, he death threats and suffered you know, attacks on his businesses, et cetera. So I don't want to see all that great work wasted. Yeah, I do think they need to follow through on this, and I think the public needs to put the pressure on them to do so. And hopefully Doge will continue to do its work. I mean, I think that was a great idea. and I'd like to see it continue.
We're going into the 4th of July weekend, and I know President Trump really wants to sign this bill on the 4th of July or over the holiday weekend. And there's a poll out that says Democrats now have some of the lowest patriotism numbers ever recorded. They're just all sick to death of being American. They hate the country. And Republican patriotism is at an all-time high. Do you think that is going to be reflected in the midterm elections? Is that going to be a factor going forward from here?
I think all these victories that he's chalking up are going to be a big factor. And I think we're going to make history and have the party that's in power grow seats. And I don't think the Democrats are going to have the success that they're hoping for. I don't think they're going to take back control of Congress. I really don't.
A bold prediction. We'll see how it plays out in the months to come. Jeff Cruer, political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, and author of America's Last Chance. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
It's no surprise that people love their pets. In fact, 97% of pet owners consider them part of the family. Amazon's Jen Ray has more.
Amazon Pet Day makes caring for your pets easier than ever. The 48-hour sales event features thousands of deals with the convenience of Amazon's fast delivery. Whether you're welcoming a new puppy, upgrading essentials for a senior pet, or looking for products that pamper, there's something for everyone.
Nearly two-thirds of U.S. households have a pet. That's 86.9 million homes.
With so many households having pets, Amazon has something for every pet owner and their furry friends, from trusted basics to exciting new favorites across price points. Plus, Amazon is expanding its pet care offerings, now providing prescription pet medications on Amazon.com through VetSource, a leading pet pharmacy.
On May 13th and 14th, Amazon Pet Day will offer incredible deals, including on our most popular and pet-approved brands, like Purina Pro Plan, Iams, PetSafe, O Norman, Ring, and more. Learn more at Amazon.com/Pet Day. As the school year winds down, many high school students are thinking ahead to what comes next. For some, that means staying academically engaged over the summer and preparing for the transition to college. Shauna Thayer, CEO of the online education platform Sophia Learning, has more.
Sophia Learning offers college-level courses that students can take at their own pace and are designed to transfer for credit. This summer, we're giving eligible rising high school juniors and seniors free access to 6 college-level courses. It's a great way for students to get a head start, see what college classes are really like, or try something new without the pressure.
A new survey finds that 72% of high school juniors and seniors who plan to attend college in the next 2 years feel they need to go to college to be successful, but 51% want more time to decide on a major.
Preparing for college is exciting, but can come with uncertainty. This program gives students a chance to learn at their own pace, gain confidence, and make informed choices about their future.
Learn more at sophia.org. That's Sophia with a PH.org.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. This whole Democrat delaying strategy on the big, beautiful bill is a curious one. And I can kind of see where they're headed with it or what the original thinking was, because they probably ran the numbers and realized that their odds of actually stopping the big, beautiful bill were not great. And there is Republican opposition to it, especially in the House. There are some Republicans that didn't want to vote for it and made quite a show of opposing it. But most of them opposed it for fiscal responsibility reasons. They thought it didn't cut spending enough, was the big complaint. And you can't get behind that if you're a Democrat. Democrats want big spending. They want corruption. They don't want crackdowns. They don't want the Department of Government Efficiency. They want mass migration. They don't want secure borders. They're opposed to everything that President Trump is trying to do. And not just because they don't like Donald Trump as part of it, too. But this is all counter to the very core, the very essence of the Democrats as a party. And that essence is, frankly, becoming repulsive to the American people. The Democrats' approval ratings are in the toilet right now, and I would submit their approval ratings would be even lower. I think they're around 20% or something and sinking under that. And I would submit they'd be even worse if it wasn't for the fact that Trump is such a lightning rod, such a big personality, and a lot of people who don't really politically agree with the Democrats don't like Donald Trump. So some of them are going to jump in there and give the Democrats a thumbs up, and they still can't get past 20%. And I think the performance of the minority leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, is a great example of why. Because Jeffries decided he was going to be the star of the show overnight for delaying the bill. So he just stood there and rambled on and on and on, doing what the Democrats think is a heroic filibuster. They're all in love with this vision from old movies, Jimmy Stewart, that some guy is going to stand there and give a big speech and the whole country is going to come to its feet in thunderous applause. And so first Cory Booker and now Hakeem Jeffries have thought they could just sit up all night and talk. And it was a debacle. I mean, the Democrats were falling asleep listening to this guy just ramble and ramble and ramble with nothing meaningful to say whatsoever. So the Democrats started running into the chamber while he was talking, and they had figured out where the cameras are pointing, so they knew which seats would be visible behind Hakeem Jeffries. And as the Democrats passed out from his endless windbaggery, they would run in and drag the sleeping ones away and replace them with Democrats who got a nap so they could pretend to stay awake and listen to him talk, because they wanted pictures to go out that showed what seemed to be a full house. They wanted to create the illusion that he was speaking to a packed chamber, even though it was empty. And they certainly didn't want members of his own party being comatose behind him while he was holding forth. So it didn't work. And a lot of video and footage of Democrats sleeping and lapsing into comas behind Hakeem Jeffries have gone out there. Also, before the filibuster began that he was trying to mount, Hakeem Jeffries put a picture of himself on Instagram holding a baseball bat and saying he was going to beat up the big, beautiful bill. He wanted to look like a tough guy, like a fighter. But the baseball bat was one of his little fungo bats. He looked ridiculous. And I don't think he got, maybe he thought he was being funny or it was a jaunty little joke, but that is very tricky. It's very tricky to make a joke to try to get some public sympathy that also reveals a deficiency in your own character. It's really hard to joke about your own weaknesses. And right now, the Democrats' big weaknesses is that they look weak. They're just not relevant to anything. They're not part of any important national discussion. They have no priorities that align with middle-class working Americans. And the American people look at Donald Trump and they see a guy hustling and doing things they want to do that they energetically support. And the Democrats can't think of a way to lay a glove on him. The big thing they're pushing now is the idea that the big, beautiful bill was immoral somehow. That was a big part of the Jeffries tirade, that it was a moral challenge to stand up to it. And what they mostly mean by ranting about that stuff is that the big, beautiful bill is doing things like enhancing border security, deporting more illegal aliens, and taking able-bodied people off of Medicaid that never should have been on it in the first place. And I don't think there's a big American constituency for the parasite party right now. The public mood is not in that direction to stand behind Democrats and say, yes, we demand corruption. We demand illegal aliens. We demand American jobs being taken by foreign nationals. We want to shower them with taxpayer-funded benefits. And you're darn right, we want people who are able-bodied and capable of work to just be paid off by welfare programs forever. And no, there's nobody wants that. And there's a lot of reasons they don't want that. And part of it, besides the general sympathies of the American public, is that they just came out of the Biden years. And the Biden years were so weak and apathetic with a senile president and a media that was propping him up. It just left people so sick to death of that weakness and ineffectuality. They don't want to be weak anymore. They don't want to be part of a country that sees itself as weak and exhausted and questions its own moral right to exist, which is a big part of Democrat Party rhetoric. And maybe that stuff plays on college campuses here and there. But among the general public, not many takers for that. Remember when Biden got in trouble for inflation? People would complain about inflation. And Biden's people, his munchkins, would run out there. And their basic argument was, stop complaining about high inflation. You don't know how good you still have it. You're definitely doing better than the poor people of wherever. And so what if you have to pay 40% more for groceries and $10,000 more a year just to keep your lights on? You should be happy to pay those higher prices for the wonderful things that Joe Biden is going to bring to the world. So pretty much the argument was shut up and stop complaining. It didn't go well. People don't like being told to shut up and stop complaining. It never really works. But, you know, besides the fact that it's alienating, people could look at what was happening and they could remember before Joe Biden came along. And that's the key. The Democrats have lost their ability to wipe out institutional memory. They used to control the media completely, which means they completely controlled institutional memory. And if they wanted you to forget what happened 3 years ago, they could basically do it. They could airbrush inconvenient truths completely out of the public information stream. They can't do that anymore because there's people like us, the show, me, my Breitbart News, all these guys. We're all out there. We're pulling down bigger numbers than the media is in many cases. Mainstream media networks are collapsing. Some of them are going to go out forever in the next couple of years, I strongly suspect. They can't hold on to their audiences. So they don't have any influence anymore. And they couldn't make you forget that everything was better before Joe Biden came along. And right now, they can't make you forget how bad it was under Joe Biden and how different it is under Donald Trump. I mean, the border is astounding. We heard nothing but excuses and failure from Democrats over years for the borders. Nothing we can do. Nope, can't do a thing. If you give us a bill and you give amnesty to a few million illegals, we'll think about maybe tightening up border security a little. But in the meantime, just like with inflation, their response was stop complaining about getting murdered. I mean, illegals are out there murdering, raping, robbing. Stop complaining. Stop telling us to remember the names of the victims. We don't want to. Just suck it up because this is the best it's going to get. And then Trump comes along, and in like 6 weeks flat, he shuts the border down. Trump was giving a press conference yesterday, and he said he himself was astounded at how low border crossings have become under his administration. So everything the Democrats told you about border security was an abject lie. And Donald Trump proved it in a heartbeat. When he got into office, people notice stuff like that. And sorry, Hakeem Jeffries, he at one point during his Stemwinder, he said that the big, beautiful bill would unleash an immigration machine on steroids. If that room had actually been filled with Americans, if we'd been paying attention, there would have been thunderous applause for that line. That was like a Donald Trump election campaign speech. Of course, the immigration machine should be on steroids. We want that. Americans desperately want that because they know how badly out of control the border became. They know how bad the illegal migration system got, and they want it cleaned up. Just pure and simple. It's something they support. So a filibuster was not going to turn things around for the Democrats. And now that the big, beautiful bill looks like it's going through, it's another win for Trump in a string of them. I'm John Hayward sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Summer can be a nonstop sprint for busy families. Between camps, road trips, and backyard barbecues, meals and snacks need to be quick, convenient, and kid-friendly. Lifestyle expert Yvette Rios has tips from the dairy aisle.
June is National Dairy Month, and dairy is a summertime lifesaver. So whether it's string cheese in a cooler, yogurt cups on the go, or even cottage cheese, these grab-and-go staples fuel kids without slowing parents down. Refrigerated doughs are another smart pick.
According to new research from the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association, 77% of parents turn to dairy for convenient, kid-friendly summer solutions.
There are so many simple ways to build out a meal with dairy. Pasta salads with shredded cheese, veggie trays with ranch or sour cream dips, cottage cheese bowls topped with fruit and eggs, eggs for easy breakfast or protein-packed snacks.
To get more meal ideas and snack inspiration, visit EasyHomeMeals.com. That's EasyHomeMeals.com.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and ADD.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. There was a big dust-up at the Supreme Court this week over universal injunctions issued by judges and the limitations of judicial activism. And the star attraction in that fight was Justices Brown Jackson and Justice Barrett, arguing over the nature of these imperial injunctions over the imperial judiciary, and most observers think that Barrett got the better of it. And Jackson did not do a very good job of defending her position. Here with us to talk about it is Keith Gross, Republican senatorial candidate in Florida, an entrepreneur, a pilot, an attorney, a former state prosecutor, and author of the book Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thanks so much for having me on. How are you?
Now, I'm doing well. I'm watching the fight at the Supreme Court. And of course, your priors are going to have a lot to do with what you think of this argument, because I think someone on the left who wants an imperial judiciary, at least when Trump is around — they don't want him around for Democrat — but somebody on the left who really wants judges to rein in the authoritarian, Hitlerish Donald Trump are going to applaud Jackson and say, yeah, she did a great job. But that's not most people. And most people looked at this exchange and thought Jackson's opinion and her writings were frankly embarrassing. She had almost no legal argument to make at all. It was pretty much her feels, her feelings about what Trump was doing and her feelings about what the judges are doing. And Barrett just ripped her to shreds.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to see a Supreme Court justice that has such a poor grasp of basic constitutional principles and founding ideas that this nation should be built on and should continue to rule even today. I mean, she has a history of this, though. This isn't the first time she's uttered an opinion that just makes no sense in regards to the Constitution.
And we're unfortunately stuck with her because that's how Supreme Courts work. But it's increasingly clear that Ketanji Brown Jackson is in no way qualified to be a Supreme Court justice. She doesn't really understand the law or the Constitution. She just knows what her instincts tell her. And she actually complained in her ruling about there being too much legalese in the law, which, I mean, yeah, I don't like legalese either, but that is kind of your job, Justice Jackson. You can't really complain about it.
Yeah, I mean, in one of her recent opinions, she said it was regarding the First Amendment, and she asked a question during oral arguments. She said, "It looks to me like the First Amendment is really unfairly hamstringing the government in its ability to restrict speech," as though she didn't understand that was the whole point. So at this point, I'm just not even surprised to read the things that she writes.
She does occasionally give off the impression that she's never actually read the Constitution, never mind, you know, become qualified to be a Supreme Court justice. And that's one of those very basic things that seems to have eluded her, which is one reason why she has so many critics. Now, Barrett, on the other hand, not usually a tough conservative warrior. She's been disappointing to a lot of people who supported her when Trump appointed her. But she did a good job in this case on fighting back against the imperial judiciary and pointing out that these universal injunctions are ridiculous. And a lot of Democrat judges, including Justice Sotomayor, who's still on the court, were big critics of universal injunctions in the past, when it would have been a Democrat president who would have been affected by them. But now, of course, Justice Sotomayor has completely changed her opinion now that the universal injunctions are hurting a Republican president.
And that is what we've got now. We have an imperial judiciary where, effectively, in order for the Trump administration to get anything done, even things that are clearly within the powers vested in the president by our Constitution, the president still effectively needs unanimous consent from nearly 700 district judges, because if any one of them writes one of these opinions that puts in place a national injunction, that administration policy is dead in the water until it works its way through the courts. And, you know, when you're president, you got 4 years. You don't have years for something to work its way through the courts. What should happen is a court should say, you know what, this is beyond our jurisdiction because we don't have the right to analyze everything. If it's a power clearly vested in the executive, it doesn't matter if we like it or not. It doesn't matter if Congress likes it or not. If it's a power of the executive branch, that's it.
And Justice Alito made that point really well. He hasn't gotten as much attention because he didn't directly confront Jackson the way that Barrett did. But Justice Alito chimed in here, and he was rather critical of Amy Comey Barrett. And he said she didn't go far enough because we haven't really stopped judicial activism. We've just removed universal injunctions as a weapon in their quiver. But there are other ways to do it. And sure enough, within days of the Supreme Court slapping down these universal injunctions, we started getting all these class action lawsuits being filed through activist courts that are just another way of trying to gum up the works and slow things down.
Absolutely. I mean, this is no way to run a government. And back to your point about Ketanji Brown Jackson not understanding the constitutional principles on which our nation was founded, it's clear, based on her opinions, that she's never read Federalist Paper number 78. We like to think of our branches of government as being separate and equal branches of government, but the reality is the judicial branch was always supposed to be the weakest, and that's spelled out clearly in Federalist 78, where it points out that the judicial branch doesn't have the power to write laws, nor does it have the power to enforce laws. Therefore, it's weaker than the other two branches. The only check and balance in place in our system, if the executive branch does something, which is clearly defined as something they're allowed to do in the Constitution, anytime the executive branch exercises its powers under Article 2, the one and only check and balance we have is impeachment and removal. And if it's big enough and offensive enough to rise to that level, Congress can act. But the judicial branch can't step in and try to curtail operations of the executive branch so long as those operations are clearly within the Article 2 powers.
Isn't it true that some of this problem is due to Congress, to the legislative branch, offloading so much of its power into the bureaucracy and changing the balance of power between the three branches, and that necessarily created this gigantic, legalistic, endlessly litigated system that we live in today, where Congress isn't passing clear laws anymore, they're empowering bureaucrats to make things up as they go, and that's kind of under the administrative branch, the executive, and that's where the Supreme Court and all the lower courts get involved and turn this into a running legal argument instead of a matter of clear legislation.
I mean, that's exactly right. Congress has made a mess of separation of powers issues, not only by chipping away at executive authority by trying to tell the president how he can run his branch, but also, as you pointed out, by improperly delegating a lot of their legislative authority and responsibility to executive branch agencies. And so, I mean, take the SEC, for example. That's an example of an agency that writes its own rules, has its own court system, and it's all under the executive branch, not following things written by Congress, not with judicial review from the judicial branch. It's an all-in-one house judge, jury, and executioner. It's a really weird way to run a government.
I don't think we've ever seen quite as dramatic a case before of an administration of the executive and the president being so diametrically opposed by much of the permanent bureaucracy. It's not really functioning as one big administration. Instead, it's no longer even controversial to say there is such a thing as a deep state or a permanent bureaucracy. And those people don't like Donald Trump at all, and they're doing everything they can do to sabotage him.
No, we saw this during Trump. His first term, you know, we saw a lot of people that were inside the administration working against the administration. And part of this stems back to the muddying of the waters regarding separation of powers that's been happening for decades, going all the way back to a case called Humphrey's Executor, where the Supreme Court sort of invented this idea of a quasi-independent executive branch agency. And that really muddied the water from what most Americans would say is common sense, which is executive branch people work for the executive branch, which means they work for the president, and the president can fire anyone that works for him. That's sort of the general theory. But the courts have really made a mess of that. And then you add in Congress coming up with the Merit Review Board and union protections. And in short, they've tied the president's hand unconstitutionally, in my view, and the view of many constitutional scholars. They've made it so the president doesn't have the authority to operate his branch the way the founders laid out.
For much of my life, Americans have been told not to worry too much about the government getting huge beyond all belief and powerful beyond all reason, because if we don't like what the government is doing, why, we can just throw the bums out. We can vote against them and they go away. So as long as we have democracy as our shield, we don't have to worry about authoritarianism. And now this appears to me to be the opposite argument. People that are supportive of Jackson and of the imperial judiciary are saying, no, we should be ruled by people you never get to vote against, with limitless power to control the government and stop the people that you did get to vote for and would get to vote against. That just turns the whole thing on its head.
It absolutely does. I mean, Americans are tired of being ruled by an unaccountable, unelected bureaucracy. Congress is supposed to be writing the laws. Neil Gorsuch, he wrote a book called Overruled, and that was the gist of the book. It's showing how executive branch agencies and the bureaucrats that work for them have stretched the bounds of the laws written by Congress and created a rule by regulation that was never intended.
What do you think we should do to reform this? A tentative step in the right direction, perhaps, by the Supreme Court striking down universal injunctions. But what's the reform plan that can set the balance of powers between the branches right again?
Well, I think Donald Trump's actually doing a pretty good job of that right now by kicking back against the decades-long destruction of that separation line. You know, all the way back to several decades ago, the judicial branch, they caused problems with this separation. Trump's pushing back. That's what we can do. We can buck the status quo, take that power back.
That sounds like a good idea. We'll see how it works out moving forward, but it is an interesting time to see so much of this being laid out on the table at last. Keith Gross, Republican senatorial candidate in Florida, entrepreneur, pilot attorney, and author of the book Dirt Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Planning a summer road trip? You're not alone. Over 75% of Americans are hitting the road this season. But before you pack the snacks and playlists, make sure your car and your car insurance are road trip ready. Start with a full vehicle checkup. Brakes, oil, tires, wipers. Pack an emergency kit. Learn how to change a tire and bring a backup map because GPS is not always reliable out there. Understanding your coverage is important as well. Although many people think they understand their insurance, a recent survey found 96% of drivers misunderstood at least one part of their policy. And that's where the General can help. With our app, you can review your policy, file a claim fast, or get a quote in 2 minutes or less. At the General, our mission is to give people a break when they need it most. And that's why we've made managing your car insurance easier, faster, and smoother, so you can stay focused on the road ahead. Planning a trip? Visit thegeneral.com so you can hit the road with confidence.
With the cost of living rising dramatically, budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. T-Mobile has launched 2 new experience plans, adding industry-leading value and savings, plus a 5-year price guarantee, so customers can rest assured that the price of their talk, text, and data stays the same. The Experience Beyond plan includes over $200 in added value for every line every month, with satellite connectivity, yearly device upgrades, and an entertainment streaming bundle that includes Apple TV+, Hulu, Netflix, and more. For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
National Iced Tea Day is just around the corner, and it's the perfect time to celebrate everyone's favorite summertime beverage. As a tea sommelier, I'm always looking for tea products with high-quality ingredients that are sourced responsibly. When it comes to a bottled tea, my go-to is Tea Java. It's brewed in small batches using quality tea leaves from Java, Indonesia. No sugar, no calories, and no added preservatives. Just a refreshing, authentic tea like I brewed it myself. Tea Java is a must-have this summer. You can learn more at teajava.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic.
I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. Independence Day is upon us. It's tomorrow. And at this time of year, every year since I became a pundit and commentator, I like to ask people what they think independence means and what they want to be independent from. And I think that's a really provocative question, simple one. But people's answers are very interesting to that question. Like, what do they think it means to be truly independent? When I started asking that question, it was back during the Obama years. That's when I got into this game. And Barack Obama was in power, and he wasn't very popular with independent voters usually. They usually tended to skew against Obama and his party, but not very heavily. And sometimes he'd pick up independent voters and do well or better amongst them when polls would be taken. And that always made me chuckle. I mean, this guy is no sense about independence. He wants you hooked on the government in every aspect of your life. He's for absolute central government supremacy. There's not a single thing Barack Obama thought the private sector did better than the government. Not a single thing he thought you should be trusted to do with your independence, up to and including, you know, feeding yourself and taking care of your health care. And it just amazed me that anybody could call themselves an independent voter, which, you know, means they're not part of either party, but also supposedly conveys a sense of an independent spirit. I'm not a doctrinaire voter. I'm not an ideologue. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. Well, how can you possibly support the people that want to eliminate the very concept of independence from the American polity and make it so that you're completely dependent on the government for control and direction in every aspect of your life? You should want to be more independent personally as part of an independent nation. So what makes you more independent? Well, first and foremost, you should want to devolve government power. I mean, that's just inarguable. If you live in a giant centralized state, as we do today, and a lot of the people on the left want to be even more so, you have no control over it. I mean, you get to vote on things, sure, but your vote is one among countless millions. And when the moment comes around for big national elections, the next presidential race, the next congressional race, whatever it is that you don't like the government doing that you want to be independent from will be only one factor among a great many in how people cast their votes. And as you've probably noticed, the political class at the national level is very, very good at making people forget why they were angry at politicians or what issues they really cared about, and in a variety of ways, distracting them, paying, offering them lollipops. Pretty good at making the voters just keep putting the same people back in office over and over and over again. At the national level of politics, the retention rate for getting reelected is crazy. I mean, I don't think it's ever been below 70 or 75% at worst. And that was at a time when people supposedly hated Congress and wanted to get rid of all of those bums. And they still got reelected 70%. It's usually much higher than that. So, you know, you really want power devolved down to the people in your community, in your state, that you have some control over, that you can feasibly vote against, vote out of office. If you don't like what a state politician is doing, you have a decent shot of getting that person voted out of office. Not really so much at the national level, but at the local level, you do. And if power is more at the state level, you can demonstrate your independence by moving. If you don't like what a particular state is doing, or a county or a city, you don't have to live there. And we have, in America today, in this day and age, we have what must surely be the most mobile population that has ever existed. especially because after the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of us work remotely, and it doesn't really matter so much where you live anymore. You don't really have to move someplace where the work is if you can telecommute. So we have a tremendously mobile population that should be voting with its feet when it doesn't like things. And it does. We do have huge populations. The blue states are collapsing. People are fleeing them in droves. I live in Florida, and this is one of the states everybody comes to. So that's a good way to be independent, to just have the ability to move away from a place that you don't like, that you don't want to live, governed by people you profoundly disagree with. Well, get out of there. That's a great way to express your independence. You should be wanting democracy as a symbol of independence, as a shield of your independence, but don't fetishize it. Don't think that voting for office is enough to protect your liberty, because it isn't. It just isn't. Even at the local level, even with elections every couple of years, even if you lived in a more libertarian national government and power was federalized down to the states, still, you only get to vote once every couple of years, right? You don't do it every week. What chaos that would be. So votes don't come along that often. But you do get to vote with your money every hour of every day, with your personal decisions about what job you take, about how you spend your money, what you buy, who you do business with. That's a way of expressing your vote, your opinion, your desire that no political system can ever replicate. So you should want to be governed, to be ruled as little as possible in order to exercise true independence, to live where you want to do what you want to work as you want to. Hey, you got to work. You know, it's not a fantasy land here. You can't just dream job on day one of getting out of school and expect to rake in the chips. It doesn't work that way. So sometimes working is hard. And a lot of people criticize the work ethic, capitalism, whatever you want to call it, and say it's so unfair that people are forced to work at jobs they hate just to put food on the table. That was really the entire premise of Marxism when that got off the ground, was convincing people that working for capitalists was soul-destroying and that you're a slave even if you're getting paid. But what's the alternative? How else do you earn a living? How else do you allocate human resources? If it's not by voluntary choice, which is you and me accepting and offering jobs, then how done? Well, and the answer is compulsive force. There is no other answer. Sorry. I know if you're a college kid listening to your Marxist professor, you're living in some fantasy world where some all-wise, all-knowing super government can figure out the exact best way for everybody to live and distribute all the resources with equity and fairness. And that's absolute errant nonsense. That nonsense has gotten more people killed than almost any idea ever imagined in the history of the human race. Because the alternative to choice is force. There is no other. If it's not people choosing where they want to work, where they want to live, how they want to spend their money, then it's going to be people getting forced to work and forced to buy things and patronize certain organizations. That's your two choices. So if you really want to be independent, you know, you want freedom, you want capitalism, you want the free market that gives you a chance to decide how you want to live. And if you want to be independent, you need patriotism. And I know that's going to be a radical notion for people who have been educated the other way. A lot of people are taught these days that patriotism is jingoistic and mindless. It means slavish obedience to the country. It's the opposite of justice and compassion. Nothing could be further than the truth. Patriotism is the antidote to tribalism. If you don't want to be governed by feuding tribes of people and competing interests, then you want everybody patriotically coming together in one nation under God. And we happen to have that in this country for as long as we can keep it. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Thanks very much for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.